Blog Talk Radio.
Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. It's a new summer era. We don't wanna see the heroes. We fighting against each other. It's the love that we need with one another. You understand? Trust might be love. No.
Good evening, everybody. Happy Sunday. Welcome to another Andy Morrell Dollhouse Radio production of Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. And tonight we have a few issues, as always, to go into. The first issue would be Black Lives Matter, and the second issue would be atheism, and the next issue will just be miscellaneous issues. And, you know, all issues are of import. Yes, they actually are. So, again, welcome to another Indy Morrell Dollhouse Radio production. And we're in the latter part, well, the middle part of July, and it's hot, 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 but I'm loving it. And like I said before, I'm almost dreading September because, as you know, September comes, and then right after that, here comes October, November, and all those other awful months. But anyway, let's get right on into the show, because as we know, time does pass, and God bless for that. Okay, the first topic, as I said, is going to be Black Lives Matter. And as we know, we've had another police shooting, police killing, down there in Louisiana. I think it's there in Baton Rouge. I've got an article here on that. But what I want to read right now is something that I had planned to read into the show last week in reference to the Dallas police killings. Okay, these things are happening, but how can I put it? Well, just that. These things do happen. It's unfortunate that they happen, but they do happen. And it brings back to mind something that that some poet named John Donne had said. And I remember the words to the poem wherein he has said that no man is an island entire of itself, but instead is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind. Therefore, never sin to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. In that sense, we're all equal in this thing called life and living. We're all equal. Actually, we are. Anyway, having said that, I had written this, as I said last week, and I wanted to have read this into the show. Because it's not unique that what I've written here and what I'm going to read into the show, but we all are the same, but then again, we all are different, and by the same token, we are different, but we are the same. It's all about thinking, and then again, how we perceive our reality based upon our perception on what reality is or isn't, either or. Anyway, I had written this here. I said, it's always a wonder to me that I feel zero when I hear of a police person being shot or killed. Then again, I really don't know any police people on a personal level. I had a cousin who was a police person. He's gone now. As far as is known, his death wasn't work-related in the sense of having been shot or anything like that. His death was of a medical or biological nature. Then again, the massive heart attack he experienced could have been work-related, brought on by the stress of being black, being a black man in America, and also a black police person in America. Then, too, how can I feel sympathy for individuals whose job they take it to be to harass or police me and those who look like me at every step and turn? I was, on an occasion, beaten by three police personnel in the police station while I was handcuffed. They were huffing and puffing as they were beating on my body as I was handcuffed, the three of them. The desk sergeant or lieutenant behind the desk did nothing but look on or continue whatever he was doing, but he did nothing as the senior ranking individual in the room. Thus, they were all complicit in their criminal activity against me. Make a long story shorter, when I went before the judge the next day, he read a charge against me of resisting arrest and having had to have been drugged to my cell, kicking and screaming. That shit wasn't even true. All of them there at that time were thus complicit with lying on an official document. I spent 3 days in the county jail behind that nonsense. I was 45 years old at that time. Prior to that incident, the last time I had been in trouble with the police, I was 16 years old. At that time, I spent one night in the town jail and one night in the county jail. Trust, those police persons that physically abuse me, I do want something to happen to them. It would only be justice that I be the one to bring it to either one of the three of them, all three of them. Some will say it's not intelligent to feel as I do towards all police because of those three. I don't feel that way towards all police because of those three. The negative policing of black people in areas wherein we reside is in every state and city in this country. No matter where we go, we see the policing follows a pattern. Then, too, no matter where we go in this country, Then, too, no matter where we go in this country, wherein white folk reside, we see another and more congenial pattern of policing. Basically, one rarely, if ever, see a police person in predominantly white areas. If so, one finds out more often than not that police are in that area to, again, police them. We know the question, do you live around here, sir, and or ma'am? No, I have no sympathy for police people. I'd rather not even think about them. When and if they do, read that part again. No, I have no sympathy for police people. I'd rather not even think about them. When and if they do their job, fine. They are only doing what they are supposed to do. Their job isn't supposed to be killing black people or harming us and family in any way. Well, if that is their job, it's going to be up to black people to change that job description. Just saying, that's what I had written. And basically, that's how I feel. At the same time, you know, I'm very much aware that it's unfortunate that I feel that way. But I know that as a person of consciousness, how can I feel any other way? One can even say that it is in somewhat related to, let's say, someone continually bullying you and you tell someone about this person bullying you, and they tell you, let us just be a bit extreme, and they tell you, you know, to take your problem to God. You know, they tell you to pray for him or her, the ones that are doing the bullying. Come on, I mean, that's not correct, because the person continues to bully you, although you're constantly praying for them. So in a real sense, at some point, a mental shift has to take place for you to realize that, hey, something has to be done by me, or something has to be done by someone to stop this person from continually bullying me, because he or she isn't going to stop by just praying for them or talking to them. But at the same time, even for that to happen, a shift has to take place within that person who is being bullied. A shift has to take place in his or her brain to come to that realization that something has to be done. But at the same time, still, it's unfortunate that that person who is bullied has to resort to the same, let us say, force or negativity that this person is throwing on them. But that's one of those mental conflicts that we constantly have to go through in situations in life. And I guess, well, me having gone through a lot of situations, and then again having seen a lot of situations, I can honestly say that that's how and where my mind is today. Because I never have seen, it's not fair to say that I never have seen a police person act congenial or decent, rare, but I have seen that. But however, being totally honest, I'll have to say that it wasn't in this country. It was when I was over in Germany, in Berlin, Germany. It's a long story there, but to make it short, I will even say that when I was over there in Germany, I actually found myself speaking to police people. Like, case in point, we may have been in a situation wherein we were in close proximity, such as an elevator. I may have gotten on first, or they may have gotten on after me, or vice versa. And then upon seeing another human being, it was, hello, good morning, or over there, guten Tag, or wie geht's, something like that, whatever. But spoke to them. They spoke back to me. But I haven't had that in this country. No. And then secondly, I was over there in Germany for like 13, no, it wasn't 13 years, it was 12 years. Long story there. I didn't go for the 13. I was there for 12 years. And at no point in time had I ever heard of a police killing an individual in that country, Germany. Never. I was in Berlin, Germany, but I still hadn't heard of any police killings in the state or country of Germany at no point in time. Never. Never. And I was over there, as I said, for 12 years. But when I came back here in 96, that's all I hear about. But okay, I have over-talked my time now, but we have to go into our first music break, which is going to be a song from Lydia Caesar entitled Lifted. So here we go. We'll be right back.
Lydia Caesar. Got a remix for ya. Yeah. Every time you come around, I get so lifted. Ooh, 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 ooh. Got to admit, I'm addicted. Ooh, 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 ooh. Cause you like a hit of the best lift. Boy, you got that ooh, 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 ooh. When I need a fix, you pull out some tricks. And I be like, ooh, 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 ooh. My man, he got the golden gloves, the Midas touch. Loving like, ooh. He know I can never get enough. My favorite drug, overdosing on you. Cause men, I want no ordinary love. Oh, I went and found my diamond in the rough. Now he's mine. He ain't flawless and I love him either way. And I know to make him feel some type of way. Boy, you know you lift me up. My very own euphoria. I want more, yeah. Baby, take me higher.
Every time you come around, I get so lifted. Yeah.
So lifted. Got to admit, I'm addicted, baby. Cause you like a hit of the best lift, boy, you got that. Oh.
sweet lips, the way we kiss, body like ooh. Strung out on his fingertips, with every grip I fall deeper into you. Come in, I want no ordinary love. Oh no, I went and found my diamond in the rough. Now it's mine. He ain't flawless and I'm loving me the way. And I know to make him feel some type of way. Every time you come around, I get so lifted. Ooh, 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 ooh. Got to admit I'm addicted. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Welcome back to Indy Morrell Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. Excuse me. Our caller number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. Call in. Well, I'd love to hear from you. So, we just heard a song from Lydia Caesar entitled Lifted, and now we're going back into the issue of Black Lives Matter. Okay, in reference to what I had just read there, I had also posted this on Facebook as well, and had gotten a few responses from some of my Facebook friends. One of them had said, thanks for sharing. I've never been in trouble. Let me get that again. She said, thanks for sharing. I never have been in trouble either until I was 46 years old for misconduct, handcuffed and put in a binge. Never in my life was I ever fingerprinted and in a damn mugshot. It was settled, but the humiliation, just cause I was not shutting my mouth from some young man getting the shaft. You see, that's what this person had experienced. And as she says, basically because she happened to have been somewhere and the police were there, and evidently they were harassing someone else. But she being there, I guess she got involved. I guess by telling them, you know, you can't do that to him. Why are you doing that to him? And you know how police people are in these days. You know, they just get outright aggressive and hostile to someone who is, well, in their mind, telling them how to do their job. Anyway, well, therefore they got on her, handcuffed her, and took her to jail, and she says, put her in a binge, whatever that might be. I guess it must have been some kind of a cage-type situation that they have wherever she is. I think I read from her Facebook post that she's, I think, in Indiana somewhere. It could be Oklahoma, you know. There are not many black people down there in Oklahoma, if it is Oklahoma, but it's probably Indiana. But that's what she had gone through, just because she was sticking up for someone else. But then again, you know, not necessarily, but yes, sticking up for someone else. But the question is basically, what was it that prompted her to feel the need to do that? I mean, no doubt whatever she had seen was something that she just felt was so unjust that she had to say something. She had to do something. Because if not, she just couldn't live with herself. And secondly, because, well, she wasn't afraid. And then again, also, I guess she also hadn't known that the police were going to respond that way. Or even if she did know, she just felt that, you know, I just can't stand here silent and let this happen in my presence. That happens. That does, in fact, happen. Some people just can't stand there and let something like that happen in their presence. And then again, just saying, I mean, I recall a situation wherein I was somewhere and I had seen the police. They had a guy handcuffed, and they had even they maced him. He was handcuffed, and then they maced him, and the guy naturally began to scream and stuff. And you know, I decided, you know, let me just walk away from this, because I mean, they had the guy. And it was about four or five cops, you know, because down here in New York, they roam around in packs like wolves in a real sense. But anyway, well, and they had them. So I just said, you know, let me get away from this. And I went on upstairs and I caught the train. But I, at that point, I didn't get involved with that. But I had to leave because I just couldn't stand there and watch anymore. I just couldn't do it. And still, another Facebook friend has said, in reference to what I had written, she has said, you have your reasons, and they are just. Yes, I mean, it's like that. I mean, but, you know, we hear a lot of talk about, you know, good cops and all, but it's a wonder. It's a wonder. But then again, I know that, you know, being a police person is a job. And as we know, with any job, you have people who do their jobs, and then you have people who don't do their jobs. And then you have people who abuse their jobs, as in any job. And policing is no different, I would imagine. Anyway, still, on Black Lives Matters, this same Facebook friend, the one who I just read about, who has spent time in jail because she had to stand up for what she was seeing and what she perceived to be a wrong, and she had to speak up, and they put her in jail and mugshot her and fingerprinted her and all of that. Anyway, in reference to Black Lives Matter, okay, I guess she talking with other people and then these people not understanding the concept of Black Lives Matter in the context of them wanting to interject, well, all lives matter. So I guess they were arguing back and forth about that issue. Anyway, she came off and she said this here. She posted this on Facebook even. She says, okay, check it. There are people of every nationality supporting BLM, Black Lives Matter. The only people hung up on the name are the same ones that have been standing and watching us all die. These are the same people who didn't give a damn about black people before this slogan, and they still won't give a damn after this movement. There would have never been a need for validity from black people had all lives mattered in the first place. So, if you are concerned with all lives, then get your ass out here and fight with everyone else, because when blacks fight, we fight for all. But in particular, our lives right now, since we are intentionally being hunted. You feel offended by a slogan? Were you offended as long as blacks and the rest of the world didn't think that our black lives mattered? No. Your ass has been way too comfortable sitting back living in denial. Shaking my, she says, S-M-M-F-H, which means shaking my motherfucking, she says S-M-F-H, then G-T-F-O-H. We know what that means, right? Shaking my motherfucking head and get the fuck out of here. And she goes further to say, and just so we're clear, I don't give a fuck if you're offended. I'm offended. That isn't a tan. This is 365 GTFOH. Get the fuck out of here. And then she wrote right after that, you know, somewhat, I guess, calming down a bit, because she says, this post come from such a place of sadness and anger at the same time. I don't understand how it is that we're being attacked because we want our lives to be recognized and valued the same as everyone else. Shaking my head. That's what she said there. And then I had responded to her by saying, I'm proud of your anger. As for your sadness, you'll get over that. The thing is, as quiet as is kept, we have to embrace our anger in certain situations. Yes, this is one of those situations wherein we have to accept, love, and cherish our anger. It's an indication of our intelligence. Consider our slave ancestors. They weren't ever supposed to show anger about their condition of being slaves. Their father, mother, brother, sister, cousin, or friend could be beaten or killed at the slave master's behest, and they weren't supposed to be angry. Not only were they not supposed to be angry, they hadn't ever better look angry. Better said, they weren't even supposed to look angry. Then I wrote further, this is a new day, yet the same mindset Caucasians had in those days, many of them have that mindset in this day. And then she had responded back, to me having said that. She said, James, you are so right. That sounds like exactly what I've been hearing, that we should just let it go, get over it, move on, keep quiet, because we make them feel uncomfortable to have to admit or think about what it is that some of us have gone through our whole lives. SMH, shaking my head, I'll never let it go. I'm beyond angry. I'm ready for war. That's what she said. I'm ready for war. Someone should have been held accountable a long time ago, and I don't even know if the mere few that have caused us harm will suffice. I want centuries of justice. I want every fool that thinks they can dismiss us and our suffrage to pay us what we are all due, even if that means we have to take it out of their asses. That's what she said. And yes, she has a right to be angry. She certainly does. Well, we all do have a right to be angry. Like I said before, it's about one's mindset based upon perception, and then too, based upon what they perceive or don't perceive. And this goes for black and white alike, because as we know, there are some. Well, there are a lot of black people who are angry about this situation, just like there were a lot of black people angry about the condition of slavery back in that day. But by the same token, you had back in that day, during the days of slavery, you had some slaves who were okay. I mean, I don't know if they really were okay, but all I know is that they didn't do a hell of a lot to disentangle themselves from that situation. And by the same token, today, you have a lot of blacks who are angry. And then again, you have some who are just saying, blacks themselves are saying, get over it. Learn how to get along. Let the past be past. Forget about the past and things of that nature. But, well, I don't know. I was going to say maybe that's why they think that way, because they don't know anything about the past. They just think today is today, as if they just got here yesterday and now it's a clean slate. No, the slate is dirty. The slate is just filthy. The slate isn't clean as of yet. And if the slate can get clean, that's another issue. That's something that has to be resolved. That's something that we have to think about in terms of how to go about cleaning that slate. But then again, I mean, it's not really that difficult either. I mean, if our minds are really concerned about justice and fair dealing, it wouldn't be hard at all. I mean, all those things that happened in the past, if there was justice and fair dealing, those things would be past. That would be yesterday, yesteryear. And then now, through the preservation of justice, everything can be, well, forgotten. Because as Frederick Douglass once said, he said, you know, who could be so stolid, so cold, that a nation's jubilee couldn't warm them? Well, that was his phrase, the nation's jubilee. In other words, once the nation began to recognize the personhood of the person who had been so abused and said, you know, come forward, let us do this together. I mean, you know, Douglass said, who can be so cold, so obdurate, so dead to the claims of gratitude? You know, but it ain't like that. Anyway, so moving right along, I have this article here about BLM activists speak on manipulation of the disingenuous town hall on race. It says activists left ABC's town hall with President Obama Thursday feeling decidedly unimpressed by the lack of dialogue in what they had hoped would be an honest conversation. You know, these town hall things and the way President Obama, I didn't see the whole thing. I didn't look at it because right now I'm still a whole lot disappointed with President Obama. But blessed be upon him. I will say that because he did well arise to the position in which he is in, and still there has to be a good psychological effect there, not just for him, but for millions of black people in America and throughout the world, really, really. It's a long story as to why that is, but as we know for so long, we have been told that we lack intelligence and all those other negative things that they want to throw on us not having, but they have such an abundance of. You know, Obama puts the lie to all that. Even though, well, he should and could do a whole lot more because he's intelligent, and then again, he's articulate. He should be one, could be one, who could actually articulate what has happened, what is happened, and then now what needs to happen. But he's not doing that. So, a big disappointment, but still, blessing be upon him. Blessing be upon him. It's a psychological thing, in essence. Okay, what I got here, it says that President Obama appeared July 14th at a town hall airing on ABC in the aftermath of two black men being killed by police under dubious circumstances in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and the Minneapolis area. Dubious circumstances, they say. Check that out. And five cops being killed in a sniper attack in Dallas. Thursday's ABC town hall with President Obama was anticipated with bated breath. Many were looking forward to an honest conversation about race and about the current tensions between the black community and police officers in the aftermath of the shooting death of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile and the attack in Dallas that left five officers dead. I'm going to have to hold off on this article for the moment and go into our next music break. We're going to hear a song now from Myla J entitled Don't. So this is Myla J, her song entitled Don't, and we'll be right back. Let us see if the song is going to engage.
Don't play with it, don't be dishonest. Hey. Still not understanding this logic. Hey, I'm back and I'm better. I want you bad as ever. Don't let me just let up. I wanna give you better. Baby, it's whatever. Somebody gotta step up. Gonna let somebody saw next up. Be damn if I let them catch up. It's easy to see that you're fed up. I am on a whole nother level. Girl, he only fucked you over cause you let him. Fuck him, girl, I guess he didn't know any better. Girl, that man didn't show any effort. Do all I can just to show you you're special. Certain it's your love that holds me together. Lately, you say he been killing the vibe. Gotta be sick of this guy. Pull up skirt, get in the right. Left hand is steering, the other is gripping your thigh. Light up a spliff and get high. Shawty, you deserve what you've been missing. Looking at you, I'm thinking he must be tripping. Play this song for him, girl, I'm just listening.
Keep it 100, man, ain't no shame. The way he put it down, he deserve everything. Oh, baby, I swear he holds it down. Yeah, he holds it now. So don't.
Welcome back to Indy Morrell Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. We just heard the song from, I said, Myla J. No, I now know that she pronounced her name Myla J. And the song is entitled Don't from her CoverGirl mixtape. Our caller number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646 5954038. Call in. I'd love to hear from you. So right now I'm on this article about the town hall meeting that President Obama had hosted, I guess we can say. I mean, there was a commentator there as if ABC hosted it, but more so the president hosted this town hall meeting. And I was going to say something earlier about these town hall things. I recall the first time I had ever seen something like this was during the Clinton presidency. And at that point in time, President Clinton, he had some Caucasian woman up there, you know, talking on the issue of race, but not racism per se. And like I always say, there's a big difference between talking about race and talking about racism. They are not the same thing. But at the same time, they are somewhat conjoined and connected, but they're not the same thing. Definitely not. It's like talking about salt and then sea salt. As we know, salt is salt, and sea salt is more healthier than salt, but it's also salt. Differences. Anyway, where I last left off here, it says here that many were looking forward to an honest conversation about race and about the current tensions between the black community and police officers in the aftermath of the shooting death of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile and the attack in Dallas that left 5 officers dead. Erica Garner, the daughter of Eric Garner, who died after being choked by New York City police in 2014, stormed out of the taping of the town hall, saying that she had been railroaded by the network, denied the opportunity to ask the president a question, something she said she had been promised. Garner says she felt that she had been used for ratings, and a few activists in the room agreed that the event seemed to be manipulative. The town hall was clearly a curated event for ABC to quell protesters and organizers. It had nothing to do with actual future for black people, and I think that for us, we want to push POTUS in the last few months as the president to take executive action to defund law enforcement agencies that have consistently violated the civil and human rights of black people. That's what one of the participants of this gathering had said. I think her name is Pastor Tracy Blackman. Yeah, she's with some kind of church. And she went further to say that there was a lot of talk about police making mistakes. There was not even an acknowledgement of the possibility that some of these killings by law enforcement officers are not mistakes. Some of them are crimes, and we didn't talk about that. Interesting. They say it was said that, you know, police make mistakes, pulling out their gun mistakes. Consider what was that guy in California, the BART station? I forget his name right now, wherein the cop just pulled out his gun and shot him. A mistake? And then again, the news media actually gave him an excuse to say that he must have thought he was pulling out his taser. I forget that kid's name, but we all remember, if we do remember. And then the article goes further to say that this Pastor Blackman described how Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick was seated next to Cameron Sterling, son of Alton Sterling, and tried to forge a relationship with the boy, giving Cameron a pen and telling him to wear it. You know, Cameron Sterling, I guess, well, I have seen a clip of this town hall thing via Facebook, and this guy Cameron Sterling is the son of the guy who was killed there in Baton Rouge, and he was tore up when he was standing there with his mother as his mother was talking to the press. He tried to contain himself, but he just couldn't. He just couldn't hold it in. God bless that little kid, and the unfortunate situation that happened, just horrible. And at the same time, this governor of Texas, the same lieutenant governor of Texas who had said that police shouldn't be protecting Black Lives Matter activists, even said that the Black Lives activists acted cowardly when they ran away from the shooter as if they're supposed to stand there and get shot. I mean, besides that, I mean, like I said before, police have a job to do. People sign up to be police people, and people know the inherent danger in being police people. I mean, you can't be, well, I almost said you can't be a coward and be a police person. That's not true, because you got a lot of cowards who are police people, and that is a real problem. You got cowards carrying guns. That is a problem, but that's another issue right now. But actually, that is the issue. But again, this is not what's talked about. I mean, it has to be a shift in the conversation, really. And I have an article about that I'm going to bring up later on. Someone at least does talk about the conversational narrative that has to be brought forth, and then over the current narrative that's being narrated about police killings and about the police culture. Anyway, so the article goes on to say that this pastor Blackman was also uncomfortable with the fact that the mother of Michael Slager, that's that cop who shot that guy in the back in South Carolina and tried to put his taser next to his hand. Anyway, it says that Michael Slager, all right, it says Blackman, which is that pastor who was also a participant in this town hall, was also uncomfortable with the fact that the mother of Michael Slager, the South Carolina police officer who fatally shot Walter Scott, was acknowledged in a room full of people whose families were directly impacted by police violence. Now, you see, how is she part of the narrative in terms of, I guess they like to say, healing and bringing people together? How is this cop who murdered this black man going to be part of a narrative concerning healing and bridging suspicion between the black community and the police force or police agencies? Need a new narrative coming out. Anyway, the article goes further to say, what did you think it would do to families who are already living with daily trauma to call on those people? And you didn't call on not one of the people of the victims who were in the room. Eric Garner's daughter, Mike Brown's mother, you didn't call the victims on the other side, Blackman said. I thought it was extremely imbalanced and manipulative for all involved, and I was offended by it. We cannot continue to allow media to abuse us for the purpose of ratings. And the article goes further to say that Obama spent a lot of time at the town hall saying all grief is the same. That's not true. Grief is grief, but it's not the same. I'll read that part again. This is Obama. This is our president, black man. Obama spent a lot of time at the town hall saying all grief is the same, and we have to come together. And while those two things are true, what we didn't discuss is why black people continue to be killed with impunity by law enforcement and who is going to actually hold them accountable. Well, more so by law enforcement and who is going to actually hold them accountable. In other words, when police commit these egregious acts, right now there is no accountability for those acts. They may be prosecuted, but as we know, as we've seen, they're never actually punished. They are basically exonerated, basically. But anyway, the thing about all grief being the same, I mean, in a real sense, that right there can be somewhat philosophical. That can be explained to be not true. I mean, just hearing that outright, it does seem like it could be true. But no, that MF and nonsense is not true. It is not true. It is not true. Because I won't go there. Let me move right along here. Okay. One thing I wanted to have brought out is I have seen our president, President Obama. He was on. He was talking about. In the wake of the police killings there in Dallas, Texas, he was talking about how police agencies in the black community have to come together. And he has said some words in reference to that come together that I disagreed with. I mean, there's nothing wrong with us coming together, but at first, I mean, you know, let us start cleaning off that slate, as I had mentioned earlier. But so long as, you know, the slate isn't cleaned off, I mean, come on. No. I mean, consider, I mean, Michael Brown, I mean, when he was killed, they were talking about, you know, the rift between the black community and the police. And I mean, you know, the slate should have begun to be clean then, you know, start sweeping it off. But no, since Michael Brown, we've had at least more than 10 other people murdered. More than 10 black people just shot by police. Unarmed, and therefore without cause. And like they're still talking about healing, community coming together. Come on. I mean, you keep piling bodies upon bodies and bodies talking about get up, FOH. But anyway, I had written this here in reference to what I was listening to President Obama say. I said that I disagree with him when he says, I disagree with him when he says when communities are distrustful of police, it makes the job of all police difficult. No, I said, the shoe is on the wrong foot, so to speak. When police agencies are distrustful of the communities they are in, that's what makes their job difficult, harder. It's got to be about the same mindset as U.S. soldiers dealing with an enemy in the enemy country. Everybody is suspect. Let me read that part again, you see, because this is, or how can I put it? What I just said there, is a part of a real dialogue that has to be understood, and we start coming from there. I have said this here. When police agencies are distrustful of the communities they are in, that's what makes their job difficult. Not that the people in the community distrust the police, because come on, we have to consider and or figure. We have to consider and or figure that the people in that community are not dumb, they're not stupid, that they are possessed of a mind and therefore intelligence. But coming off like that, that's coming off the way Obama put it and the way white racists put it, black people in black communities don't have no sense. They don't have no intelligence. They don't have no discernment to think or distrustful of the police. But no, it's not like that. Not at all. And it's insulting, in my opinion, to hear something like that. Anyway, it goes further. I went further to write. Why are white police and police of other? Let me start that again. Why are white police and police of other ethnicities so distrustful of black communities? Why wouldn't we think racism has much to do with the mindset of these police personnel? Racism is ingrained in American society, as it is throughout the planet. Blacks and well-meaning individuals have much work to do. But let me read that part again. I had said there, and listen, I disagree with him when he says when communities are distrustful of police, it makes the job of all police difficult. F-A-L-S-E, false. And that's why I wrote again, no, the shoe is on the wrong foot. When police agencies are distrustful of the communities they are in, that's what makes their job difficult and harder. Why is that so difficult to understand? It can't be. It can't be that difficult to understand. But at the same time, you know, I had also wrote something else in reference to this issue. I had said that, in terms of, you know, the difference, the divergence in thought on a same issue that people are involved in, and they their thinking is different on a particular issue, but by right, they ought to have the same thinking, because what's right for one is right for another. It more so is like that than not like that. Excuse me. But I had written here that basically somebody has said something on Facebook in terms of, you know, they don't understand how come other people don't understand what's going on. Between black and white people, or between black people and other ethnicities. I had said, or written, reflect on how angry the slave masters got when his Negroes not only would run away, but if he'd reflect on how angry the slave master got when his Negroes not only would run away, but if he'd overhear some or one of them talking about the idea of freedom. Then too, you have the slave patrols ever on the lookout to put the runaway back in his or her place. In essence, the same mindset in regards to black folk yesteryear, the same mindset today. It is. I mean, you know, when we think about, you know, why is it that why is it that a lot of white people can't understand the phrase Black Lives Matter? How come they can't see that? And then in contrast, why is it that they want to put forth the phrase All Lives Matter in contrast to Black Lives Matter, as if black people don't know all lives matter, including our lives as well, being a part of that all. But at the same time, I mean, again, it's a part of that their dichotomy, so to speak, that separation, that disconnect. But at the same time, when whites, these races, say all lives matter, they don't mean black people's lives. They really don't. So moving right along, I also had gotten on Facebook something in reference to this Sheriff Clark, this black police person, this Sheriff Clark. He'd be on Fox News a lot, and it says here this article says this about him. He says there is no police brutality in America. It says Fox Sheriff goes off at what he calls subhuman creeps in the Black Lives Matter movement. It goes further to say that Fox News brought on Sheriff David Clark to take on what he called the subhuman creeps in the Black Lives Matter movement. Clark suggested that officers should stop protecting Black Lives Matter protesters so that business owners and people in the community could clash with them. He then continued saying, "There is no police brutality in America. We ended that back in the 60s, so I don't know where they're coming from." Really? And this from a black guy. But like I said, really, to understand today, we have to understand what happened yesterday. I mean, from an intellectual perspective and also from a psychological perspective, which would comprise that intellectual perspective. Indeed. And now also something else here as well. But I'm going to have to go into another music break. I'm going to have to break off. And then when I come back, I'm going to go into something that Charles Barkley is up in the news saying again. But right now we're going to have a song from Mila J. Her song entitled Diamond, featuring Drake and Future, from the CoverGirl mixtape. And we'll be right back.
Get home. Popping up a storm like you usually do. Talking to your friends like you usually do. Telling them I never spend time with you. It's hard to find the time we've been
sipping on Dom Perignon for no reason. Popping tags up a echelon for no reason. Seen this bad little Jones, she was perfect. I let her push the floor right now if she worth it. Falling in the middle of the club, no jersey. He don't want no liquor cause he been drinking that dirty. Bring the eights by the case, my bitches with me. Bring some ice for my cup, my drink with me. Diamonds, 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 diamonds on me dancing. Diamonds, 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 diamonds on me dancing.
And if you took it, you can vouch for me. I did it my way, you can vouch for me. I put the cocaine and the powder in the couch, homie. Whenever I step outside the house, I get the Glocky on me. Bad bitches wanna come by the paparazzi on me. I got so many bad bitches that I barely wanna. I'm barely paying attention, baby, I need substance. I know you spent some time putting on your makeup and your outfit. But...
Welcome back to India Morrell Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. We just heard another song from Mila J. entitled Diamonds. Our caller number here, and that was from the CoverGirl mixtape, and it featured in there Drake and Future. And our caller number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. And we're still on the issue of Black Lives Matter. There's so much to do with this issue because it does, in fact, it's right now, it's really, how can I put it, it's really large in this country in reference to what's happening right now and then again what keeps happening. But anyway, I was going to go into the Charles Barkley issue, but I wanted to stay on the Sherrod Clark for a few more seconds. That is, as I said there, he says in his brain there is no police brutality in America. But then again, we can very well imagine too that he is also of that mindset that there is no racism in America as well. And furthermore, being of that mindset, he would be of the mindset that the racism that black people think exists only exists in their heads. In other words, if black people would just stop thinking about racism, there'd be no racism. Idiocy. But at the same time, concerning white people, it isn't, I guess, again, this is where, you know, there needs to be a new narrative. There needs to be a narrative shift away from black people concerning this racism, and then again, directed toward white people. Because in a real sense, racism exists in the heads of white people. A case in point, take the Confederate flag. They still want to, honor that flag? And they still say, what, it's not a racist symbol? That's in their heads, only in their heads. But then again, at the same time, they are as racist can be, racist, racistly. But yet, they don't, well, it's not the thing about they don't see it. They'd rather hide it and act like, who, me, what? No. I don't have nothing against black people. or they, well, whatever. But moving right along, I just wanted to have said that. Now, moving right along, going into the thing about Charles Barkley, this idiot. I mean, but again, we have to realize that there are a lot of black people who are like him, who are just like him in terms of thinking, to a lesser or greater degree. Anyway, this article here says that former NBA star and TNT host Charles Barkley remains an outspoken figure in sports and pop culture. But while Barkley is always willing to give an option, maybe they meant opinion, he doesn't always provide eloquent perspectives when it comes to some situations. Barkley recently spoke about the shootings of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile and offered an opinion that seemed a bit misguided. Instead of blaming the police for using violence in situations that could have been handled differently, Barkley chose to blame the black community. "We need the cops," Barkley says. "We need the cops, especially in the black community. We as black people, we've got to do better," Barkley said. Barkley continued to defend police while condemning blacks. "The cops have made some mistakes." There I go again. "The cops have made some mistakes. Black people have made some mistakes. That don't give us the right to riot and shoot cops." Barkley also suggested that blacks aren't as riled up when it comes to black-on-black violence. "We never get mad when black people kill each other. Well, that always has bothered me. I've always said, we as black people, if you want respect, you've got to give each. You can't demand respect from white people and the cops if we don't respect each other," Barkley said. Excuse me. However, Barkley apparently is so out of touch with black communities that he never takes time to see what's really occurring. "When it comes to black-on-black violence in cities such as Chicago, I've witnessed entire communities march to bring awareness and an end to gun violence. In fact, hundreds of community leaders, students, and families of the victims of gun violence held a rally in Harold Washington Park in June. Similar marches and gatherings have taken place in communities across the country, but Barkley never took the time to research such events and probably only relies on mainstream media to provide a glimpse of what occurs in black communities. Moreover, Barkley is completely wrong when it comes to the dynamics of race and police brutality. There are criminals of all races in every city in America. However, blacks are being killed at an alarming rate. Over 71% of police who were shot and killed in 2016 were killed by white men. But over 100 unarmed blacks were killed by police in 2015, according to Mapping Police Violence. That reveals how blacks are overwhelmingly victims of police violence and without posing as a serious threat. Barkley can be funny and spontaneous when co-hosting on The Great Inside, the NBA show on TNT. However, he should probably stick to basketball and jokes until he takes the time to research social issues before he rants. Yep, that's another thing. When people talk about Black Lives Matter, that supposed other issue of black-on-black crime is interjected by those who are in disagreement with the Black Lives Matter slogan, its people, or its stated aims. They always want to bring up, well, what about black-on-black crime? But that's, how can I put it, that's a deflection. Because as some people are saying now, in a sense, to change the narrative, to talk of another narrative, people are now asking about, you speak about black-on-black crime, what about white-on-white crime? Because if there is such a thing as black-on-black crime, there must be the converse, white-on-white crime. What about that? But then some might say, well, but whites aren't complaining that that police kill whites the way blacks are complaining that police kill blacks. But, hey, they don't realize something even when they say that. That, like, police just kill blacks without cause. But then again, more so than not, when police shoot some white person, that white person, I mean, more than likely, had something that caused that police person to shoot him or her. It's just like that. That's just the way it is. But anyway, in reference to what Charles Barkley just said there, and in reference to the often rebuttal to Black Lives Matter, people talk about the issue of alleged or the slogan black on black crime. That's a racist term anyway, because it obfuscates the issue of white on white crime. Why are whites so eager to talk about black on black crime when they're not as eager to talk about white on white crime? Anyway, this article here that I'm going to read is from a Facebook posting from a Facebook friend of mine, Miss Anderson. I call her Miss Anderson because she used to be a nurse at the program in which I was in, and which is where I also now am employed. And something about Miss Anderson, I recall, because her and I would talk often. We'd always get in some kind of heated discussion. She didn't agree with me on a lot of things, and a lot of things I didn't agree with her on. So we'd have a back and forth. But anyway, I recall an occasion wherein she was telling me how she had gotten in hot water, so to speak, at the workplace, because like I said, it's a addiction therapy place. And Ms. Anderson, being a nurse, she would also, part of her job was to have groups and talk to us about drugs and drug use and, you know, what drugs do to us and things of that nature. And also, Ms. Anderson was the type, being black and conscious, she would also try to bring in the sociological aspect of drug use as it pertains to black people. But in having said all of that, I had to say all of that to come to say this. On an occasion, in one of those groups, Ms. Anderson had put that information out. And the way she had put it out to this group of people, I guess like I don't think she ever said that this to our group, but she was telling these guys that you know, basically, you do drugs because you're black. That's true to a certain extent. And further, it's more true they're not true, because, you know, it is true that, like, a lot of blacks do drugs because they're black, not because they're black per se, but because in the areas in which they live because they're black, that is more so what's there. Because we have to also consider that white people also do drugs. And if white people do drugs, do they do drugs because they're white? You see, that's a nuance in this kind of situation. But anyway, Miss Anderson happened to have put that out in a group that she was hosting. And one of the guys, a black guy, I guess maybe he got into some kind of trouble or whatever, so he figured that you know, he'll practice some deflection. And he said, well, you know, Miss Anderson told us that we do drugs because we're black. And she got a lot of hot water behind that bullshit. This guy gonna go and report her. Yes, report her for that. But anyway, all right, I had to say that about Miss Anderson, a great woman, great woman. Now her and I are our Facebook friends, and she be posting every now and then. And in reference to Black Lives Matter and also black on black crime, she had written this here. She said, "I'm amazed at the language and finger pointing at black on black crime and how it is viewed as a racial construct of blacks just being out of control and outright criminals. Let us go back to the unwritten history that has been purposefully eliminated from American history books. When the African people were stolen and imprisoned here with the enslavement in America, they were made to erase any and all customs, culture, language, and any reminders of Africa. All culturalization, language, customs, and behaviors are of the enslavement. People who were, let me read that part again, all culturalization, language, customs, and behaviors are of the enslavement. In other words, a lot of the ways that we are today, this came up out of slavery. And it is in line with Dr. Joy, it's in line with what Dr. Joy DeGruy says about post-traumatic slave syndrome. Anyway, Ms. Anderson goes on to say that people who were of European descent, she said, they beat, raped, murdered, made all the Africans speak their language, believe in their religions and culture. Everything from Africa was murdered or beaten out of them. So what you see are reflections of the cruelty that allowed survival, which is a mirror image of their captors and so-called proud Americans of today. No one wants to truly understand the post-traumatic trauma of people who are still being murdered, lynched, beaten, disrespected as American citizens, even though the generational lineage of being in America goes back far longer than any of the judgmental Europeans and their descendants. In order to repair the damage done to American blacks, if that is at all possible, is to first learn the truth of their enslavement here in America and the enduring 548 years in America. For as long as I can remember, and I'm 64 years old, black people in America are still, in one way or another, doing their best to be free. The European desire is for blacks to continue to assimilate to their ideas of how people should look and act and continue to annihilate those who don't. The most unfortunate horror is what you see is black people acting out on one another what has done to them. Post-traumatic slave disorder is just what it is, ongoing reactions and reflections of trauma. Someone stand up and speak the truth. Stop talking around the problem and acknowledge what you keep trying to kill and beat out of black people. The mirrored reflection is you, white America. The mirror reflection is you. Indeed, I can agree with that. Matter of fact, a black psychiatrist, his name is Frantz Fanon, he spoke about that exactly in a book that he wrote entitled The Wretched of the Earth. Indeed. Anyway, it's now time for another music break. It's 15 minutes to the hour. And we're going to have a song now from, another song from Mila J. This is entitled Friends, also from the CoverGirl mixtape. So here we go, and we'll be right back.
Playing it cool, you were playing. I know I wasn't the only one you messed with, but it was good, I was on to the next one. I remember when you started checking up, boy, you must have learned your lesson. Trying to tell me how I always was a blessing. Stayed in the obvious, but you guessed it. Yeah, I got you. Too bad I'm vibing, nigga, I'd be fine without you. Guess you found out all the mother wasn't about shit, and now you're gonna waste your time chasing me, nigga, please. Ain't no need to waste your time being caught up over me, nigga, please. I don't wanna hear about it, you can tell your friends about it.
Go tell your friends about it.
Now you wishing you was with me, living life so chill. Even all your friends that I was cool with, they don't know that you be on that bullshit. Even though they didn't think that I was stupid, you did. But I ain't tripping, just don't push it. It's cool, I'ma focus on my vision. Cause you only get one pass and you use it. You use it, amusement. So funny how you used to say, pass it over. So stupid, and it's so amusing. Your effort is so useless, and now you're gonna waste your time chasing me, nigga, please.
Welcome back to Indie Morrell Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. We just heard another song from Mila J entitled Friends from the CoverGirl mixtape. Our caller number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. And we are still on, but I'm ready to leave the issue of Black Lives Matter. There's so much more to say on that, and I have so much more to read from that. But I do want to, I guess, in the last 10 minutes, touch on the issue of atheism. And I guess we can say from a personal perspective as well. Okay, so going right into it. This stems from something that was placed on Facebook. Some guys, I recognize them to be what's considered to be five percenters. They some of them there in Harlem, Manhattan, here in New York. And they had a picture up there, and it said that they had a picture of Malcolm X, Jesus Christ, and Marcus Garvey. And the question that they were putting to people was, which one of these men were most influential in your life? Which was the most influential figure in your life? And a lot of guys said Jesus Christ. A lot of people, black people even, had said Jesus Christ. None said Malcolm X. Well, maybe one, but more so none. But anyway, seeing that picture, well, they had their A, B, or C. They had Malcolm as A, Jesus as B, and then Marcus Garvey as C. Anyway, I had responded to that by saying, A is my answer, hands down. Then I went further to say that Jesus never did nothing for me. As an adult and out in the world, the teachings of Jesus became suspect to me. I'm supposed to turn the other cheek and bless them that abuse me, like when some Caucasian person steps on my foot intentionally due to his or her mind having a complex against the color of my skin. F-O-H. That's what I said to that. And then when I had said that, a Facebook friend had asked me, what was it that caused me to to become atheist in my thinking? And she had told me, well, if you don't want to answer, you don't have to answer. But I figured, why not? Because, you know, you all know me by now. I love to talk. But just a second. So I had responded, I had wrote this in response to her question. I had said, I don't mind answering your question on this issue. Basically, I can ask you the same question, but in reverse or opposite in construction, i.e., how come you're still in the belief and how and have chosen not to disbelieve? Let me read that again. I said, basically, I can ask you the same question, but in reverse or opposite in construction. That is, how come you're still in the belief and have chosen not to disbelieve? I wrote further, I mentally evolved through reading. I had gotten into the habit of reading the history of our ancestors' enslavement in this country. The history of that period was horrifying and horrible. I had known about any of that while in school, elementary or high school. Excuse me. While growing up and being made to go to church and always wondering about the idea of God when I hadn't seen any actual manifestation of such a presence in my own life, I only listened to what was said about this idea but never gave it any detailed thought. Had known that I should. To everyone in my environment, God was something that just was, no doubts about it. So, as I said earlier, reading historical accounts of slavery, I then did begin to wonder about God. wondering in the sense of why did God allow such a situation as that to happen and do nothing. Read of the prayers the people prayed. Read, too, of how slave masters also went to church every Sunday. Eventually, I began to think if there is God, he must be an enemy of black people and a friend to white people. All throughout the planet, blacks suffer and whites live large. Then I changed that to say, if there is a God, he must be an enemy of dark-skinned people or people who are non-white. Then I reflected, but if there is God, how can he be an enemy to anyone? After all, we were told, among other attributes of God, that God is love. Where was this love of God shown in a historical context toward African people and other non-white people? Nowhere. Then I reasoned, if God is an enemy of dark-skinned people, being dark, he's therefore an enemy towards me. But again, how can this be? God can't be an enemy of me basically because I've done nothing to offend God, nor had black people in general. Yet based upon moral precepts, white have done much to offend the sensibilities of God, yet they flourish and live large all over this planet. Thus, I then began to reason there can be no God. Basically, when I overthrew the idea or concept of God that had been lodged in my mind, it was a serious obstacle blasted to nothingness. Being honest, upon initially uttering the thought of the non-existence of God, I awaited the thunderbolt. It didn't come from that God who is so vengeful that simply denying him will cause all manner of harm to me. The thunderbolt not having come, I was off and running in my mental freedom. Then I began to really wonder about this idea I had never given thought to. In thinking, I thought, if God is all-powerful, how can Satan have any power? If Satan does have power, how can that power be other than the power that God has given him? But then again, why would God give someone such as Satan power? If God was a God of love and goodness, for we know what we were told about Satan within the idea of God. He's the evil one, so we were told. Yet, if he is the evil one, how has he been allowed to be evil? Who gave him the mindset to be evil and the power and or influence to go along with it? It then began to seem to me that God and Satan were in cahoots, in partnership. But again, how can this be? Or how could this be logically speaking or thinking? Hence, it can't be like that. Thus, neither God nor Satan exists. They are an idea conjured up in the mind of man for his own enrichment and control of others. Later on in my reading, I stumbled upon this little ditty. The philosopher, said the theologian, is like a blind man in a dark room looking for a black cat that is not there. Could be, replied the philosopher, but if he were a theologian, he'd find it. Interesting. That's exactly how most people I'd find myself talking with were in regards to God and the religion they believed in. Again, though, to each his or her own. That's how I see that. And then, My Facebook friend who had asked that question of me after I had written that, she wrote back and said, I was 49 years old when God showed me through dreams and visions what he was going to have me do in CA, I guess California, a year before I relocated. I thought they were nightmares because I was to work with former prisoners and other sick people. Everything happened the way he showed me. It was an awesome experience I saw and had many miracles happened. I also suffered a lot and was blessed to overflow with, which continues as we speak. I believe that Jesus died on the cross for us, and we are to share in his suffering. I can't say I understand why everything happens the way they do, but I choose to believe in him because of all things that I have experienced. I could write a book. I was poisoned and called out his name and did not die. There were also many stories. Many people suffer in this world because of decisions others make or their own, or etc. I've experienced being filled with His Spirit to overflow. He has kept me alive many times. I can go on and on and on. Okay, I'm going to have to sign off now because we have round down to the end of the show. But I have something else to read into here about religion that I also had to come across. But right now we're going to go out with a song. If I can pull this song up, we're going to go out with a song from our producer, Indy Morrell, entitled You Don't Deserve Me. But before I do that, I want to announce also that as of the 25th, Dollhouse Radio will be again celebrating Dollhouse anniversary. So with that said, we're going to go out with India's song, You Don't Deserve Me. So here we go. And everybody have a good night till next week.
You